Royals had yesterday off due to a postponement due to the cold, bad weather up in Detroit. They have today off, a scheduled off day, and then they'll play again tomorrow. It's almost like the NBA playoff schedule. Hey, Ryan Lefevre, the voice of the Royals, is with us. How you doing, Ryan?
Good, Wade. Good morning.
Good morning. I would guess that you were probably pretty pleased to be in the press box and not on the field on Tuesday. I hear it was really cold down there.
Yeah, it was mid-May in our booth. We had the heat on, we had the windows closed, and those poor guys out there looked pretty cold, but we took full advantage of the facilities.
Yeah, I bet. Is it, you know, they want to have a few more off days. They moved up the schedule. There's games starting in March, but there are a lot of people complaining about this because you do see on television a lot of empty seats. A lot of people, of course, don't want to freeze their tail off watching baseball.
Yeah, and I mean, I believe for a long time that the season's just too long, period.
Yeah.
And my argument has always been that when you get to September 1st, you know, we basically lose a large segment of our fan base to football for an entire month.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're in it. And even if you're in it, I mean, there's still people that just feel like it's time to transition over to football. So you lose everyone for a month, and then you try and bring them back for the playoffs. And I think the ratings lately have shown that that's a challenge to bring people back. The everyday ratings on television and on radio for baseball are outstanding. And so when the season starts, people are engaged. And so it sounds like a grumpy old broadcaster complaining about how many games we have to do, and it really isn't that. But when you have the chance of getting snowed out at the beginning of the season and the chance of getting snowed out at the end of the season, I mean, that just tells you how many games are played. And I've always felt, in addition to losing everyone for a month at the end of the year, that, you know, guys are just tired in the month of September. And you got to bring up all these September call-ups just to get them through that season. So I've always felt like you could shave a month off of this regular season, start later, finish earlier, and like other sports, just include more teams in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think you'd maintain your fan base, and you'd have a lot fewer. You're going to have rainouts, but I mean, like you said, when it's 34 degrees outside and flurries, I mean, that's not baseball weather at all.
No, it's absolutely not. So I could see you're thinking something like if you did mid-April to mid-September, that'd shave a month off the season. That would be a little bit more in line.
Yeah, and then. You know, you include more teams in the playoffs. You keep more markets engaged.
Yeah.
More, I mean, the first and then the second wild card spots, I mean, just had so many more fans because their teams had a chance to go to the playoffs, where prior to that, they had no chance of going to the playoffs. And so, yeah, and you just guarantee yourself better weather. And, I mean, the season was 140 games for a long time, then it was 154 games for a long time, and then 162 games. And there's a lot of financial ramifications. I understand that.
Sure.
But this weather and most sports fans going to football in September, I just don't think are good for baseball.
No, I agree. I will put in the write-in vote when they're up for commissioner. I'm going to put you in as a write-in, okay? Ryan Lefevre for baseball commissioner. Are you okay with
that?
Yeah,
shoot, at those prices, I'd take that job.
Ryan Lefevre, the voice of the Royals, is with us today on the Sports Ticket. So let's talk about the Royals. You know, I've heard people that are worried about the bullpen. There are people that are worried about starting pitching. But I want to start with the offense. What about the offense for the Royals? You know, one run each of the last two games, but did win the last game 1-0. I know it's early. Salvi Perez with the freak injury carrying his luggage out, probably, I would guess, more towards the line of 6 weeks instead of four with a torn MCL. Jorge Bonifacio suspended for 80 games. That's two pretty important bats that come out of the lineup. How do the Royals get through all this until they can get one or both of those guys back?
Yeah, and the cold, too. I mean, I'll just circle back to the cold again. This is just not great hitting weather. Now,
True.
The White Sox proved otherwise on opening day at Kauffman Stadium, but I don't know how they're going to get through it other than they're just going to have to get through it. And the two that you mentioned, Salvador and Bonifacio, were just killers. I mean, Salvi hit 27 home runs last year in 129 games and had a really good spring training. So, you know, he's your number four hitter. And Drew Butera has been a nice player for the Royals, but he's your number nine hitter. So you trade a number four hitter for a number nine hitter. And then Bonifacio, you know, he has a chance to become one of the Royals' best hitters. And this was a very important year for him, just for experience, to get a full big league season under his belt. And now he's going to get half a season. So they're just going to have to find a way, because it's not like, you know, you just reach into the closet and pull out another catcher and another young outfielder with the promise that Bonifacio has. It's going to be a challenge.
Let's talk about the offseason moves the Royals made. Lucas Duda, after Eric Hosmer signed with the Padres, they pick up Lucas Duda on a one-year deal. Mike Moustakas comes back. The market dries up on him. One-year deal. John Jay, a one-year deal. They get Justin Grimm after the Cubs let him go. And now I hear people saying, hey, these are good signings because, one, they're cheap one-year deals. They didn't have to break the bank, and they're not blocking any key prospects. But here would be the angle I would have. Isn't that a bit of an indictment on the current situation with the prospects in the minor league system? Is that, shouldn't the Royals, and I know they gave up a lot trying to win it all. Certainly we know that it worked out. It was worth it in 2015. But they also gave up prospects the last couple of years trying to keep the band together and try to make one last run. And I'm not saying that was the wrong thing to do. But there are other organizations that can trade prospects, and they're not quite as far away from retooling or bringing up prospects that could at least be ready to play right now. And it seems to me that on the surface, if you bring in Duda, you bring Moustakas back, and John Jay and Justin Grimm, they're kind of bridge gap players because of one-year deals, which I'm okay with. But it also tells me that the minor league system, none of these guys are ready to go right now. And that, of course, concerns me as a Royals fan.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair assessment, and I bet if Dayton Moore was part of this conversation, he would agree with you as well. He made it very clear that the Royals need to restock the farm system, and that's one of the downsides of doing what they've done the last 4 years, going for it and making the trade that you talked about, although I'd hardly call it a downside when we get to go to two World Series.
Right, but exactly.
This is just kind of the way it goes. The good news is that all these guys aren't an A-ball. I mean, there are players in Double-A and there are players in Triple-A. And I would also agree with you in that the one-year deals are a good sign, too, because the Royals feel like there are players that are right on the cusp. Mm-hmm. Whether you have someone like Chesler Cuthbert, and they're going to try and find as much playing time for him as possible. And so he's in the major leagues getting experience. I'd throw Jorge Soler in there. I mean, he's never really been an everyday major league player. He's going to get a chance to do that this year. We already covered Bonifacio and the time that he's going to lose. And then you have guys in AAA and you have guys in AA. So it's a transition period. And I remember my dad used to tell me, he told me a long, long time ago, he goes, if your best prospects are in A-ball, you have a bad farm system.
Yeah.
And you can twist and turn that any way you want to, but you really don't know if a guy's a true prospect until they get to Double A or above, because you know you're going from three A ball levels to just one at Double A. So the guys that survive A ball and make it to Double A, I mean, that's the first real test. And so if you have all your prospects at A ball, you can say anything you want about your farm system. You don't have a good farm system. But the Royals do have players at Double A and they do have players at Triple A. But yeah, there was a gap. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen between now and the end of the season. The Royals might be able to make some moves, depending on how the season goes, to continue to fill that gap.
Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, with us today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. You mentioned Cuthbert and getting him at bats. I'm interested in this because this is the question I've had. I like Mike Moustakas. I do. But I thought that he was one of the more expendable free agents not to worry about bringing back, because you did have a guy, it seemed, ready to go, and Chesler Cuthbert at third base. At first base, you didn't, so I understood the push to try to bring Eric Hosmer back and his leadership. And so then it looks like everything's opened up for Cuthbert to be the everyday third baseman to see what he can do, and then they re-sign Moustakas. So can you explain to me, and maybe Dayton's explained it to you guys, the thinking about bringing Moustakas back when they did have a guy who they do want to get at-bats for that could have easily gotten those at-bats had they not re-signed Mike Moustakas?
Yeah, I mean, a year ago, Wade, when we were chatting, and who knows, we probably had a discussion during that interview about what free agents might come back, which ones won't come back, who are the best bets at coming back. And I don't know what I said, but I know what I felt, that the two guys that were least likely to come back were Mike Moustakas and Alcides Escobar.
Yeah.
Because a year ago, the Royals had Raul Mondesi, Alberto Mondesi now, on the roster as their second baseman. He was going to get a full year of big league experience, which would make the transition over to short pretty seamless, and that made Alcides Escobar expendable. And then you had Chesler Cuthbert. You know, the Royals didn't have a first baseman. They didn't have a center fielder, so it looked like they might go after Eric Hosmer, which they did, and Lorenzo Cain, which they didn't, because they realized that they just didn't match up financially. So, yeah, I mean, I was surprised, just like you were. But I think we all figured the Royals were going to be challenged offensively this year. And Dayton and Mr. Glass are not of the tanking mindset, mm-hmm. where you just say, all right, look, let's just flush everybody out of here. Let's just bring up a bunch of young guys, and if we lose 110 games, so be it. Now, the Astros kind of ruined that for a lot of teams because that's exactly what they did, and they ended up winning a World Series.
Right.
But I would say 7, 8, if not 9 out of 10 times, when you are that bad for that long, you're not going anywhere. You need to have some veteran players mixed in with the young players to show them how to be big leaguers. I remember when I was broadcasting with the Twins a long time ago, Tom Kelly was the manager, and he had a great line. He said, it takes more than being in the big leagues to being a big leaguer. And someone has to teach these guys how to be big leaguers. And so, and I think even all the guys that led the Royals to the World Series will tell you that there were veterans along the way that taught them how to be big leaguers. So as the Royals are reloading, as they're in a time of transition, there were certain players, Mike Moustakas was not one of them, but there were certain players that early on in spring training fell down to their price range. And so they went out and they signed Lucas Duda. And then they knew about Jorge Bonifacio's suspension coming up, so they went out and they got John Jay. Had they known that Mike Moustakas would have fallen as far as he did, they may have signed him and had him play first base.
Yeah.
Because there were teams out there that saw him as a designated hitter and a first baseman, but they did not see him as a third baseman. So that's where he starts for the Royals. We'll see where he ends up. You know, he may end up moving over to first base to his benefit, because I think this upcoming offseason, again, that's how teams are going to see him. So it wouldn't hurt him to go play some first base, and then maybe Cuthbert slides over to third and Duda becomes the DH, or, you know, whatever. Who knows? But I think anytime a major league team in transition can get good, and when I say good players, good, you know, clubhouse guys like John Jay and Lucas Duda, those guys, Justin Grimm, those guys are all just off the charts when it comes to, you know, clubhouse guys and being professionals. Anytime you can mix those with young players, I think you do it. And it's better to have too many good players and not enough good players. And the baseball season has a way of evening itself out, and I'll bet when this season's all said and done, we can look back and say, oh, man, it's a good thing that they had all the players on the roster that they did.
Alex Gordon, certainly we know his struggles offensively ever since the Royals won the World Series in 15, really ever since he got that contract with the Royals. And he had a really bad spring in regards to the batting average, but I thought I heard, I think it was Mike McFarland talking about how he's not too worried about Gordon from the standpoint that he doesn't put too much stock in the spring training numbers because Gordon was working on different things, working on going the other way or going with the pitch and so forth and so on. What are your thoughts on Alex Gordon? What kind of mechanical adjustments is he trying to make after struggling the last two and a half seasons?
Well, he says it was approach, you know, that he dug himself a hole and made the mistake that a lot of players make, and that is trying to make up for last week in one game or two games. And that, you know, there's only a handful of guys in the major leagues that can pull something like that off. Normally that's just a bad recipe. So he says approach. There's a mechanical element to it. And Dale Swaim recognized last year that Alex, for some reason, was getting deeper and deeper into a crouch with his batting stance. And he's more upright in September and got results. I personally think that he's just at an age right now where he has to think about changing as a player.
Yeah.
Much like a pitcher gets to a certain point in his career and they don't have the same velocity, and the ones who can adjust and adapt have long careers. There are some guys who get to a point in their career where they need to adjust, and they just can't do it, either physically or mentally. They cannot make the change, and they go from being really good to out of the game. And Alex, I think, is athletic enough that maybe he just needs to think about approaching the game differently, like going to the opposite field, as you described. He's a bottom-of-the-order guy now. I don't think the Royals are expecting 20 home runs and 50 doubles from him anymore. Mm-hmm. But he's very good defensively. He's fine on the base paths. He works his tail off. He's a great example for young players. He's a Royals icon. He's going to get a chance to play some center field. And maybe center field is symbolic for him to be a different player, because you don't expect 20 home runs and 50 doubles from a center fielder. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much he's going to play center field, but I always wondered, like, if he did play center field, maybe he could say to himself, okay, I'm going to try and be a 280 hitter with a 360 on base percentage, 370 on base percentage guy now, than thinking about, you know, that I need to hit 20 home runs and hit 50 doubles and drive in 85 runs.
Right.
I mean, several years ago, he went back to the drawing board with Kevin Seitzer and ended up being an all-star player. So he's athletic, he's adaptable, he's adjustable. And I think he's at a point of his career where he can still be a good major leaguer and help a team win, just not the way he did it before.
Yeah, I would agree with you. More of kind of a table setter, maybe, instead of being the guy driving in the runs, it seems to be.
Sure, and he did that. He had some really good years when he was leading off. I mean, he wasn't your prototypical leadoff guy, but he got on base. And so, you know, they have a good leadoff guy right now in John Jay. But even if he's not batting leadoff, to have a table setter and not a, you know, a table cleaner mindset.
Right. The bullpen certainly is a concern, no question. And it does seem to be a situation where it's going to be like a jigsaw puzzle, that Ned's going to have to move the pieces around quite a bit until he gets comfortable with certain people in certain roles. Brandon Maurer was going to be the eighth inning guy, struggled early in the season. Herrera's looked pretty good so far. The Keller kids pitched pretty good so far. How would you assess the bullpen? I know it's really early, just four games, but is it going to be one of those things where Ned's going to have to sort it out like a jigsaw puzzle for a while?
Well, from the very beginning of the season, when we were talking about the bullpen, I always said that the key to the season is going to be Brandon Maurer, because I think Kelvin Herrera is going to be fine. I think he learned a lot from last year. So who's going to pitch the eighth inning? Justin Grimm has the ability to do that. But if Brandon Maurer could be the eighth inning guy and just take pressure off the rest of the bullpen, I think they'd be in good shape. I don't think it's going to be a great bullpen like we've grown accustomed to, but the eighth inning guy is just going to be very important. Otherwise, you're going to have either guys who don't belong there, guys where time has just passed them and being an eighth inning guy, or you're taking a young guy and you're putting him in a really tough position of trying to pitch the eighth inning. Now, what's changed is Nate Karn's going on the disabled list,
mm-hmm.
and the Royals saying that he's going to pitch out of the bullpen when he comes back. I think he'd be great in the eighth inning.
Yes.
I mean, he to me has a chance to be similar to Wade Davis. And I'm not predicting he's going to have historically great seasons like Wade Davis did, but Wade Davis was a 3 or 4 pitch starter who just couldn't seem to figure out what combination of pitches would work for him as a starter, what were his strengths, what were his weaknesses. He had a great arm. He didn't pitch with a lot of aggressiveness as a starter, and you put him in the bullpen, and we all saw what happened there. And I think the same was true for Luke Hochaver. Luke Hochaver was a guy who had a lot of really good pitches, and when he was on, he was great. But just finding the right combination of pitches and figuring out what his personality was on the mound, it just didn't work as a starter. And then he became, you know, a first-class reliever when he was sent to the bullpen. I see a lot of that in Nate Karns. I think Nate Karns, if he comes back, I think he could be an eighth-inning guy. You know, you've got Grimm and maybe Maurer as your seventh-inning guys. Then everything, you know, moves in a direction where pitchers are going to be comfortable. But you got two Rule 5 guys on the roster. You don't want them pitching the eighth inning. You got a lefty, Tim Hill, who's never pitched in the big leagues before. You don't want him to be an eighth inning guy.
Mm-hmm.
But those guys have a chance to be really good in the future. But you just don't want to, you know, you don't want to put the cart before the horse. And so that's why I always felt like the eighth inning guy, and by extension, a seventh inning guy, those were veterans that could lock those down. You know, then you can leave the horse in front of the cart. And then next year, we're thinking, gosh, Brad Keller, you know, you've got a chance to be really good. Tim Hill, where's he going to be? Bert Smith, you know, because you didn't put too much pressure on these guys too soon. So all these things will be ironed out, but I'm really excited to see how Carnes fits in when he gets back from the disabled list.
You've got power stuff, strikeout stuff, like Wade Davis. I see the comparison. Jake Junis, a terrific performance the other day in the cold weather, and Danny Duffy. Those are the two starters in the Royals rotation that they have, you know, they've developed. And some would say they need to do more of that if they can. Hopefully they can down the line. But talk about those two in particular. Duffy, his first start, he pitched really well the first three innings. It blew up in his face in the fourth, three home runs. There was talk about his velocity was down. That was a concern. I know he had a little bit of a shoulder concern there at the end of spring training, said he was okay. And of course, Danny can be dominant. We've seen him have a stretch where he's just fantastic. And then Jake Junis, the development of him and how far he's come, a guy that not many people were talking about, and then all of a sudden he's up with the team last year, pitched really well the second half, and then looked dominant the other day.
Well, I'll start with Duffy. His spring was fine, and then he had that at the very end, he had that 32-pitch outing in Scottsdale, and he didn't feel right, so he came off the mound. The Royals weren't concerned. He had a really good side session in Omaha when that game was, you know, rained out or whatever. And then he was pretty good for about 45 pitches on opening day, and then he hit a wall and got knocked around. So, I hope he pitches 7 shutout innings tomorrow here in Cleveland against the Indians, and he's certainly capable of doing that. But even though, at least for now, the Royals are not concerned about his shoulder, that I think really disturbed his increase in pitch count, which lends itself to pitching deeper into the games in the regular season. I mean, there's a lot of guys that managers are being careful, you know, 85, 90, 100 pitches for their for their very first start. So now you got a guy who goes 32 pitches, he throws a side session, and then he's strong for about 45 pitches, and then he kind of hits a wall. So it might take him a start or two to build up that endurance that he didn't get in spring training. And then, of course, just the nature of Danny Duffy, of just wanting it so badly and being so grateful of, you know, the long-term contract he got in the ace and taking that role responsibly. It might take him a start or two just to calm down and say, okay, let's just go out and be Danny Duffy today.
Right.
So I'm not concerned with Danny over the course of the season, but I'm curious to see how he does in the next two starts to just try and get his rhythm and his timing back and build up some endurance and pitch count. Plus, he's going to be pitching in the cold here in Cleveland again. Just a lot of factors there. I've always liked Jacob Junis. His demeanor has impressed me from the get-go. He just looks like a big leaguer. He has the pitches. My concern for him was that even though his slider was top-notch, he throws it so often, and it's his go-to pitch when he needs a strikeout, that against big league hitters and the best big league hitters, they're gonna come up with a counter move. And so what's he going to do if he can't just go to his slider every time? I mean, it's really good, but it's not that good. Where, you know, like Mariano Rivera's cutters, you could just say, here it comes, and,
right,
you know, you still can't hit it. But his start in Detroit the other day, his fastball had so much life on it that that showed me that he's got something else that he can go to. And then Jeff Montgomery was talking about how, you know, he's got this spike curveball that he's mixing in now just to give the hitters a different look. But he has great mechanics. He has great composure. That's where you want to start with a guy at the major league level. He can handle being a big leaguer. He can handle adversity. He's calm on the mound. I mean, you have to have the stuff, obviously. I mean, you and I just can't go out there with great, you know, composure.
Right. Yes.
But he has everything it takes to be a good pitcher. But I think he's gonna have a really good year this year. And I don't think that what happened in Detroit was just, you know, one good game for him. I mean, I think he's gonna be one of the best starters the Royals have when the season's over.
We had Les Norman on last week, and he was kind of like us in regards to the Royals and the way the team is made up in regards to win projection. I do this with you every year. You know what's coming in regards to what you think for the season. And we were all around 72 to 75, 76 wins, but there's a fine line between being a 500 team and being, you know, 72 and 90. It wouldn't take a lot to go one way or the other. And then he said that he thought it would be really a terrific season if the Royals could get to 500, which basically they've been the last 2 years, 81 and 81 last year, 80 and 82. What are your thoughts on this year's team, and what kind of ceiling, or would you even put a ceiling on this team?
Well, I mean, I felt like I felt like 500 was a realistic goal for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but that was before Salvi got hurt and Bonifacio was suspended. I mean, those are just two gaping holes for them, and it hurts Bonifacio for 2019 and beyond. So, and part of the reason why I thought 500 was reachable is there's three other teams in the division I'm just not sold on. I think Cleveland has a chance to win the World Series this year. They're good. They're driven. I mean, they should have advanced farther in the playoffs last year. I think they had a 2-0 lead over the Yankees and ended up blowing that. If they had hung on and won that series, you know, who knows?
Right.
But even though Minnesota did well last year, I mean, I think they have some pitching issues, and, you know, they went out and got Lance Lynn and they got Jake Odorizzi. Their bullpen really wasn't that good last year. You've got young players now who have expectations, and that's something that can be a challenge when they're not under the radar anymore. And Denny's always had this theory, which has proven mostly to be true, is that when a team has a surprisingly good year, when they take a huge step forward, like the Twins did last year, more times than not, there is regression the next year.
Yes.
As the league adjusts to them and the players learn to adjust to expectations. And then the year after that, look out. And he's right. I mean, that seems to happen all the time. Now, it didn't happen to the 2014 Royals, thankfully. There was no regression in 2015. But
happened to the Astros. Happened to the
Astros. Chicago's good. Yeah. Loaded with talent, but they're inexperienced. And Detroit clearly is in a deep rebuild. So I feel like there's just a lot of wins available within the division. So I was right around 500, but I think that's going to be a bigger challenge without Perez and Bonifacio and how much time those guys are going
to
miss.
And just to give you an example, the Astros, of course, 15, and then went backwards 16 a little bit, and then 17 they won the World Series. So that was
right. I mean, it happens. He's right. I mean, mm-hmm. And he's been broadcasting Major League Baseball since before I was born. But he brought that up to me years and years ago when we first started working together. And more times than not, he's right.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, before we get to the off-the-wall question, before we let you go, and we appreciate the time, I would say you're really busy, which you are, but you did have no game yesterday and no game today. So you got all this free time to talk to us yahoos out here. Do you still have your MyPillow?
I do. And thank you for asking. And thank you, by the way, thank you for being someone who said, do I still have my MyPillow? Because most people say, do you really use MyPillow? Which is funny, and it's kind of an insult at the same time, as if
sure.
I would go on the radio
right.
and promote my using MyPillow, and I'm not telling the truth.
Right.
And I am telling the truth. So thank you, Wade, for saying, do I still have my
MyPillow?
In fact, I'm looking at it right now. It's the same one I've had for the last 3 years because it's got a 10-year warranty, so I'm going to use it for 10 years. And this product has been one of the most enjoyable ones that I've, you know, ever endorsed, just because I believe in a good night's sleep, and I had some neck and shoulder problems, and so and going from hotel to hotel, sometimes you get a good pillow, sometimes you get a bad pillow, sometimes it takes two pillows. So I just take it with me, and it's kind of fun being the MyPillow guy. People ask me more about MyPillow than they do about the Royals. We're gonna promote it again this year, and I can offer to your listeners today, if they go to MyPillow.com, and the promo code is Royals. There's a 4-pack special there where you can save over 50%, and it's a 60-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't like it, just send it back. The thing that I've been using, Wade, and you'll relate to this because you have young children,
mm-hmm.
if you won't take care of yourself, if you say to yourself, I don't need to spend that much money on a pillow, even though it's great and I love it, having young children, you know, you put your kids in bed on their pillow and you go in there and check on them in an hour and they're backwards on their bed and their head's at the foot of the bed, and they just don't, there's a certain age until they start using a pillow. And so I thought, they sent me a bunch of yellow-sized pillows, which will make sense if you go to the website.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started giving them to my kids, and suddenly my kids are starting to leave their head on the pillow at night, which means they're getting a better night's sleep.
Yeah.
And that was totally unexpected. They never promoted to me, you know, try it with your kids.
Right.
But I did try it with my kids. And so if you're not going to take care of yourself, take care of your kids. But it's a great product, and I'm honored that they have asked me to endorse it, and I appreciate you asking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, last time we had you on, I think, I remember our friend Ashley out here. That's a guy, by the way, not a gal.
Okay.
He got the MyPillow, and then, well, he wanted me to ask you about MyPillow last year,
mm-hmm.
And he was the one asking the question that you just said, that you prefer the version that I gave you, and he was asking that question, which I'm sure you get a lot, and of course, you answer it last year, and we joked about it. Well, I talked to him, and he did get the MyPillow, and he told me that the first one he got, he filled out the form, he got it. It did not work for him. It wasn't what he kind of envisioned, but it wasn't what was going to make him comfortable. But all he had to do was call back or whatever. He returned it. They sent him a different one, and it fit him better, and he says he really likes it. And I think that's what you told me a year ago, was that the first one you got wasn't the one that was really going to be perfect for you, but they said, no, we'll give you a different one until we find the one that works for you.
Well, my story is a little funnier than that, and I don't want to bore your listeners, but Mike Lindell, who does all the MyPillow commercials, and he invented MyPillow, and I'm on a conference call with him in spring training 3 years ago, and I filled out the application online, and it said that I was a white pillow. The great thing about this pillow is it's not a one-size-fit-all. You fill out a questionnaire, it asks you how you sleep, you know, your height, your weight, and so it's got a pillow that's custom fit for you. So mine was a white pillow. So they sent me a white pillow, and I slept on it for a week or so, and it was okay. I mean, a week wasn't enough for me. So I get in a conference call, and Mike Lindell, and he's got that raspy voice, and he said, "How's the pillow going?" I said, "Well, it's good." You know, he said, "Well, do you notice a difference right away?" And I said, "Well, no. I've only used it for a week, but it seems to be okay." "Well, what pillow do you have?" And I said, "Well, I have the white pillow." And he just kind of lays into his assistant who's on the phone there and says, "Why does he have a white pillow? He should be a green pillow guy." And I said, "Well, I filled out the questionnaire and it said I was a white pillow." I know you are. I know you're a green pillow guy. I'm telling you, wait, the next day I had a box of green pillows at spring training delivered to me, and they wasted no time. And he was right. Like, right away I could notice, oh, okay, this is the pillow that fits for me.
Right.
So I've got the same one. I have the same one at home, and I have the same one, and then a different one on the road. And you can wash it and dry it with the rest of your laundry, and it kind of, you know, the life comes back to the pillow. And so mypillow.com, and the promo code is Royals, and you get a great deal there. And, you know, the Royals get credit for the sale. And so give it a shot, and then I want your listeners to tell me how they like it.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, before we let you go, off the wall question.
That wasn't the off the wall.
No,
question.
No, it wasn't. I got one here. I have a name that's mispronounced at times. It's definitely misspelled. When the telemarketers call me, they say, "Is Mr. Geishner there?" I'm like, "I'm sorry, nobody by that name lives here. It's Gershner."
That's the benefit of having a hard name to pronounce. You know.
Yes.
When a telemarketer calls, that it's a telemarketer because they don't know who you are.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Another thing, too, is when they ask if Mr. Geishner's there,
mm-hmm.
you just say, "No, he's in prison." And they'll never call you back again, ever.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Or just say you're no longer living. That would probably help, too.
Yeah.
What's the worst pronunciation or spelling that you have ever seen for your last name, Lefevre? Because it took me a little while to learn how to spell Lefevre. I'm not going to lie to you.
The worst pronunciation. I can't think of a worst pronunciation because there are so many of them. And I can't specifically think of the worst spelling. Mm-hmm. But the one that always gets me is most people know that there's a B in there somewhere. And it's the B is what messes everybody up.
Yes.
But I'm surprised at how many people will spell it L-E-B.
Yes.
And come up with left. For Lefevre.
Uh-huh.
Now, the correct French pronunciation is Lefebvre, which doesn't make any sense to me at all because you're leaving out about 9 letters when you say it that way.
But right.
The places where people will put that B is pretty entertaining.
It sounds like Lefevre, like you're like a, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, how do you get left? The easiest part about my name is the beginning, left.
I agree with
and
you.
People will put L-E-B because they know there's a B that goes somewhere where it shouldn't, and so they place it all throughout the name.
I understand. Are you on TV or radio with the Indian series tomorrow?
I believe I'm on TV the entire month of April.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
So what time do you guys go on the air tomorrow night?
Well, let's see. The game is on here at 4:15, so 3:15 KC. So our coverage will begin at 2:30 on both the Royals Radio Network and Fox Sports Kansas City.
Fantastic. Hey, man, we appreciate the time and enjoy your MyPillow, and we will talk to you again later on in the season.
Yeah, good to talk with you, Wade.
Take care. Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals today here on the Sports Ticket.